Just because you're a good baker doesn't mean you can run a successful bakery. It's the same for agency life. You may be great at content marketing, branding, website development, or building custom software, but it doesn't mean you'll be great at all the things required to run an agency that delivers those services, or that you'll enjoy all those parts of it either. Maybe you've felt this typical pain that's described in The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, a must-read, I have to say, for every entrepreneur and agency owner. Matt Hines, founder and president of Hines Marketing, has felt these realities as well. In the nearly 15 years he spent building and maintaining his agency, which employs about 20 people today. In today's conversation, Matt shares the role EOS, the entrepreneurial operating system, has played in helping him scale beyond himself as an individual consultant about 15 years back. As he shared his journey, three things stood out to me that have helped him build an agency that's actually lasted. One, figure out the purpose for the business beyond just making money. Number two on his list, recognize your working genius and hire for the parts you can't master or don't want to. And number three, document your plan of action and put it into a system that's actually visible to the whole team. As always, let's start with story time and hear from Matt about the moment less than a year into founding his agency when he was facing a pivotal choice about the future of the business.
I was about 9 months after I sort of quit my day job and decided to do my own thing that I had more business than I can handle. And, you know, thankfully I had someone I'd worked with before that was available and was interested in sort of, you know, stepping in and helping out. And I kind of had to make a decision. I mean, it was easy initially because I had her doing some 1099 work and she could just be a freelancer. And eventually it was steady enough work where my accountant's like, now the, you know, tax man's going to want their share of this. So I had to sort of decide, okay, do I just want to be an independent consultant or do I want to sort of build, have employees? Even just one seems like you got to have payroll and stuff for that. So, and I, you know, at the time I'm like, I really didn't know the answer to that. I'd only intended just to do my own thing and had not intended to sort of build any kind of business beyond just me. But I knew that I wouldn't know if I wanted to do that unless I tried to do it. And the idea of being able to scale what I thought at the time was a more revenue responsible way to do marketing beyond just what I could do myself seemed like an opportunity to, you know, not only expand sort of the work we're doing, but also sort of create opportunities for my growing family. I said, well, this may not be the right decision, but I'm not going to know until I do it. And so I hired Maria. She's now my COO. She's been with us for 14 years and it's been great.
She's been with you for the 14 years that you guys have been in business. Man, that adds even more to the success story. I love it.
My very first hire, and you know, I mean, I every one of our employees is critical to our business, but you know, she's my right hand and she's been critical to our growth.
Very cool. Now, I imagine, you know, as you take us back to making that decision between individual consultant, doing my own solopreneur thing, as it's known these days on LinkedIn from folks like Justin Welsh, to building an agency of scale, it's not like you headed down this path and you've never kind of hit those moments of decision of, am I still heading down this path? Or does this path look different for this next phase? What was maybe another one or two of those where you hit a fork in the road, the decision, and what scaling your agency has looked like, you know, since that point?
Look, I'm a sales and marketing guy. You know, I studied journalism and political science in school. I've never took a business class. I don't have an MBA. I had never tried to run a business until I started to try to run my own. And so, you know, a lot of mistakes made, a lot of learning from other people. And there were plenty of moments as we grew where, you know, you're hiring people, you know, we took on a lease, we bought equipment for everybody. You know, you've got payment terms on invoices out there. And so cash management becomes something you got to think about because people expect their payroll twice a month. And so you certainly get to those points where you're like, why am I doing this? Wouldn't it be easier if I just went to back to just being me? Should I do that? Like, what's the value of continuing to build something beyond just me if it's going to be hard, if it's going to cause me a lot of stress and frustration? And so it really forced me to sort of step back and say like, okay, why am I doing this? What do I want out of this? What am I trying to enable for my life, my family? What is a why that we can use as a tentpole for this company as we either grow it or don't grow it? And, you know, that was the beginning of where we eventually sort of adopted EOS as our operating platform. We redefined our values and purpose, and it sort of made it a lot easier for us to lean in on what we're doing, creating a better role for me, enabling people in the organization to pick up on things that they were naturally far more successful at and far more capable of doing than I was. And just knowing that, you know, like any business you're in is going to have plenty of hard moments, But if you're locked in on the why and you're enabling long-term something for your company, for your people, for yourself, for your family, that's important, you lean into those hard times. And so I think without having that why firmly stated, it was a challenge. Now it's a pleasure.
Very interesting, man. And I do want to get into, I'm sure there have been some role shifts over the years for you and your COO, especially, you know, as we look at how you guys implemented EOS. I'm curious to get your thoughts on what that looks like, especially for the visionary and integrator roles for you guys. But as you were talking there about defining the why, Matt, what were maybe some of the things that you looked at, how you went about that? Because at that point, it's not just about you. It is the first question of what do I want for myself as the agency owner and my family and where I want to go. But it's not like, I imagine you didn't just go off in a corner and say, hey, I'm going to define this why, and then I'm going to bring it to the team. Because if they're not involved in that, then there's not going to be a whole ton of buy-in. So how did that kind of mixture come together in defining the why for you as the agency owner and the company and the team together?
Well, I would say early on, I did kind of just go off in a corner and define that, right? Because I mean, we didn't really have, you know, we were smaller. We didn't really have a leadership structure. It was just me at the top running everything. And then I had, a couple teams doing account work, but everything was still on me. Like I was still, doing everything from finance to HR to making sure bills got paid to sending out invoices. I mean, it was all of it, right? And so I kind of said, okay, here's what I think our values are. And it was at the time saying like, here's what I want our values to be, right? And, not that they were aspirational, but I just kind of wrote them down myself. Didn't really sort of get other people involved. And I think as we've grown, to be able to say, okay, not only have we 3 years ago revisited our values and said, these are not aspirations, these are discovered out of our culture. Who our best people are today is what our values are. So we rewrote and edited our values, and we now use those to hire as well as reward people internally in the organization. And I think, as we have, as a leadership team, sort of revisited on a quarterly basis, everything from our purpose and values on down, we don't make wholesale changes. But on a regular basis, we look at those foundational elements of our business and say, is this who we are? Is this what we believe in? Because if we get down to saying, okay, here's what our focus areas are for the quarter, those have to be based all the way back to our purpose, right? Our purpose as a business and our values and what we're trying to achieve. And, I think one of the things that really motivates me now is I used to think that our purpose as a business was to help companies do revenue responsible marketing. That's not our purpose. That's our niche. And I learned that through this process. Our niche is to drive help revenue responsible marketing teams drive predictable growth in their companies. But our purpose is bigger than that, right? And the way we've defined our purpose is that we positively impact careers and lives by enabling work that matters. By moving marketers from being arts and crafts focused to be more revenue focused, that impacts their careers. That impact on their career impacts their lives. We're a small agency, we're 18 people, but if I can create a place where, I'm positively impacting careers and lives of the people here and their families and those around them, that's a really meaningful and motivational thing. There's plenty of clouds running a business. The pandemic wasn't fun. We had business that continued, but it got to be a desert for a little while as people stopped spending new money. But I'm super proud of the fact that we kept everybody employed. There were no layoffs. We kept everyone going, and that wasn't easy, but that was a priority. If we're going to have a purpose of positively impacting careers and lives, the first group that impacts is our people. And so it becomes a privilege to be able to pursue that and provide that for our company. And, could we do that for 100 people? Maybe, but we start with our 18. I think that there's a responsible level of growth we then pursue to be able to maintain that for the constituents we care about, which is our employees, our customers, B2B marketers at large, as well as the communities, around us that need help and the positively impacting careers and lives there as well. But as we look at our growth goals, we look at our future objectives and where we want to go, it's driven by that purpose. And that's not something that I kind of really thought a lot about early in my career. I think I was more just like, oh, let's just go make money, right? How much money? I don't know more. I don't know how much I need, right? There's a point like for whether you're an entrepreneur or not, you're sort of like, I should be putting money away. Like, when can I retire? I don't know. Not now. Like, how much money do I need to retire? I don't know. More than I have now. Right. So there's not really a number. And then the older I get, the more mistakes I make. I'm like, it's not just about this number, right? It's also being about spending time, for me at least, spending more time with my family. It's being able to enable career and growth opportunities for people on our team. Like as we record this, like Maria, my COO, she's on week 3 of a 3-week vacation in Greece. I'm so happy that we could enable that for any employee based on their what PTO they've accrued, right? That go and take that time. We got you. Do not dial in. Do not check work. Go disappear for weeks because that's the stuff that matters, right? Like doing your email at 10 o'clock at night and getting squeezing a few extra hours out of someone, like that's not what life's about. So I don't know. Like the older I get, the more I think about those things and the more I want for people that want it, I want to enable that for people at various stages of their career inside the organization.
I love the distinction that you called out there, Matt, between the difference between your purpose and your niche as mm-hmm. an agency. Because even as you defined that, I was like, that sounds pretty good. But then as you redefined it and said, well, this is our niche, and then you brought it up a level with the purpose, I think that does impact a lot of things from how you approach your employees, when and how they work, how you support them on vacation, all of those sorts of things. And I think a lot of agency owners can relate to the rant you just went on, you know, how much do I need? I don't know more, those sorts of things. I think Drew McClellan is a voice in the agency space who can really help folks with defining, you know, what should those growth goals look like, those sorts of things. I also like what you talked about there in enabling people to actually have that balance, to step away. One of our mutual friends, Carlos Hidalgo, who co-founded Annuitas and mm-hmm. stepped away from his agency for a bit and is now kind of doing it again anew, who we've had on this podcast, talked a little bit about the fallacy of work-life balance and another way to frame that. If you want to check that out after you listen to Matt and I, go there. I won't get on a tangent, but Matt, I want to drill in a little bit before we get into some of the ways you guys have implemented EOS and it's positively impacted your ability to scale to a certain degree mm-hmm. and to have the longevity you guys have had as an agency. One book I know kind of makes the rounds among entrepreneurs and agency owners that I've appreciated is The E-Myth. You and I have talked about there are some agency owners who maybe have read that book, who understand the challenges, but they're still living in it. So let's take a couple minutes there for folks who aren't familiar with the premise of The E-Myth. What is that? And where are some of your conversations with other agency owners around making it through some of the typical challenges that are described in that book?
Yeah, I mean, so when you hear the term E-Myth, you think E always stands for electronic. In this case, it's the entrepreneur myth. And it's the idea that if you are good at something, that you can be successful running a business at that. You bake great cookies. You should open a bakery, right? Like those aren't inherently both true. And the idea, the myth is the thing that Michael Gerber talks about. He says, to be successful in business, you have to do three things. You have to be really good about what you are providing. You do have to bake good cookies. You have to be good at operating a business today, like actually getting the trains out on time. And then you also have to be really good at thinking about where this business is going. So you've got at least a little bit of vision for where you're going to take this. Like a good business needs those three things. You as a founder can encapsulate those three things. But if you are not really good at those three things, you are going to hit a ceiling really fast. And I think that that's, you know, we realized that a couple different times in our growth where I said, like, you know, I can do the sales and marketing side of our business pretty good. Like even at our point today, like I'm still pretty involved in our sales pipeline. But the back office side of our business, like thinking about process and driving process improvements as we create efficiencies in our business, I mean, kill me now, right? I mean, like, you know, Patrick Lencioni wrote a book recently around sort of six areas of working genius for people. And you can go to this website, $25, take this test. And in six different areas, he'll tell you which are the two that you're a genius at and which are those that you should run away from, right? And if you're a genius in an area, it means you can spend your all day long doing that and it can fill you up. Like spending time talking about stuff like this, you know, doing QBRs with clients, like working through their hard problems, like sign me up, I'll do it all day long. You want to actually document that? You want me to create a workflow for how that should be executed? That is going to drain my energy faster than anything else. No right or wrong answers to this test. It's just who you are. And it's okay to say, I am not good at some of these things, but I also am not willing to relinquish it. And I'm going to keep my business of a certain size. I have a friend who, you know, without getting the details, like she had a business that was doing well, had, you know, some growth opportunities. She started hitting a ceiling. And she had to decide if she wanted to scale this business and relinquish control on a bunch of functions to help it grow, or if she was comfortable owning it and saying, this is just going to be a small family run business. And she said, this is going to be a small family run business, you know? And she has been so successful. Is it as big a company as it could have been? No. But she is able to live her dream doing work she loves, spending plenty of time with her family, and kind of having the best of all worlds for her. So to me, it's the idea of saying, like, know what you're good at, know where you need help, but know what you're willing to give up and what you're not, and be comfortable with that trade-off. It's not the fear of missing out. It's the joy of missing out, right? Like, don't embrace something, don't take on something that isn't going to fill your cup and feed what you need in your business and your life. And don't let anybody tell you that you're wrong. Don't let anybody tell you that their experience and their priorities are better than yours, because they don't live your life.
That's a really good shout. I mean, I can just think of, you know, every day we're scrolling LinkedIn and we're seeing advice, whether that's, you know, an agency owner like yourself and hearing from someone else or someone in marketing or sales or any other sort of role. We tend to lead with those hooks that say, you know, stop this, start this, do it this way, right? But it doesn't mean that even if it worked, even if it generated the results, do you want those results? It reminds me again of my conversation with Carlos on the previous episode here. Matt, for either yourself or for other peers that you've talked to, I imagine there have been times where you recognize some of those limitations in yourself. Like, I love being the face of the company, the sales and marketing, even strategically working with clients, but I don't want to do the operational pieces. Maybe this is where we jump into where EOS has helped you guys with some of that transition, or maybe if there were points where it was tough for you to make some of the transitions, to hand off some of the operational pieces, like going back, what were some of those moments in making the changes based on those realizations of what I'm good at, what gives me energy, where I need help as you added more roles to the agency?
I mean, I think the first thing, just to continue the previous conversation we had around, like, you know, making those trade-offs, like, do it for what you want, not based on what you see externally, right? I mean, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. Someone else said that long ago. But if you look at what someone else is doing, like, you know, listen, like, go find comparables, go learn from other companies, find the things that can help you, make you be successful. I mean, talked to a company like yesterday, like, they're like 10x our size. They don't do exactly what we do, but they're in the marketing space. 10x our size, their margins are better. And I look at that and say, oh man, I wish, like, I don't want a business like that. Like, I don't, so, like, there's all kinds of components of their business that I just don't want to take on. So be comfortable with who you are. But also, I think, you know, if you're going to say, listen, I want to grow this business, or I want to spend the majority of my time on things that are in my genius zone, then I need to give up responsibility of these other things to someone else. Now, if I go find someone else that can do the back office work, go find someone else to be my integrator or my COO, ideally, I find someone who aligns with our purpose and our values, who's bought off on the vision we have of where we're going to go. And I have to be comfortable then empowering and enabling them to go run those areas of the business. I know a lot of people that will hire that person and still micromanage those components and second guess that person and completely neuter their ability to be successful while they actually aren't spending as much time in their genius zone and the things that they're doing well. So you have to be intentional about making that trade-off. And one of the things I love about, you know, EOS is, you know, we don't have an org chart. We have an accountability chart. Right? We have a level set. We understand where people sort of sit in the org, but it's not about who you report to. It's about what you're responsible for. And there's a very tight level of accountability across the entire organization, but especially on our leadership team of what do you own overall? What do you own this quarter? What are your metrics around how you're reporting on that? And in a weekly leadership team meeting cadence, like, are you on track to hit that? And if you're not, it's not your problem. It's our problem. We're here to support you in helping make that better. But if you don't say it's a problem, then I assume you got it and I'm going to go focus on my stuff, right? And so there's a level of trust that gets built in a team like that. And that's partly what you have to hire for, are people that, you know, sort of the right person in the right seat that actually meet your values and are sort of good fits across the organization. And that's not immediate. Like, it takes time sometimes to sort of build that team and build that trust and that relationship and that flow. But, you know, as an owner, and again, like, without, like, you know, really super aggressive growth goals, to know I got people on our team that are just, that are, you know, whether or not they're crushing their numbers, I know that they're accountable for it. I know they're responsible for it. I know they're taking it seriously. And I know we have a cadence where if they need help, we're here to help them work through it while I get to focus on the things that I think I'm actually good at, independent, separate from those things.
I'm with you there. I love two things about EOS, that cadence of accountability. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if you tell me it's on track, I'm going to assume you're good to go, yeah. Right? But if you tell me if it's at risk or off track, then we're here to support each other. And also the way that they rephrase that common thing from an org chart to an accountability chart, it might just seem like little linguistic shifts to some people who aren't familiar with EOS, but I think you just hit the nail on the head there that it is not about who you report to. It's about what you're accountable for. And when you have the right people in the right seats being held accountable for the things that they are responsible for, you're able to get more done, head in the right direction. Maybe we could drill in on that topic a little bit, Matt, the accountability chart. I was part of an agency where, I mean, it felt to me like we struggled a little bit with the accountability chart for a while. One of the things that EOS will recommend is don't focus on the people, focus on what the business needs. What is the seat? Then the right person for the right seat. That was a struggle for us. What were maybe some of the things that were tough for you guys that maybe you would go back and do differently? Or the things that did work in structuring that accountability chart and evolving it from the time you guys started with EOS?
Well, I mean, it's past the sniff test for me to be able to say, listen, this is about the job, not the person. But real people, humans, go into those roles as well. So you have to account for both sides. I think one of the challenges is saying, okay, here's what we want the org to look like. Here's the roles we need moving forward to grow. Here's our three-year vision of where that's going to go. And then reality sets in, right? Like, so I'll give you an example. Like we knew that for us to grow, we needed to build out our internal growth team. Right? And we had a full-time biz dev manager, and we wanted to sort of move someone into more of a sort of a dedicated internal marketing manager role. We had someone that was motivated, who was right person, right seat, had all the markings. This was someone who was on our consulting team. And we hit enough of a rough patch where we're like, we don't have someone to backfill on this role, right? And the business has not grown at the rate where we can afford to sort of set someone aside into this role. So long story short, it just took longer to enable and sort of move into that function. The transparency of our plan, the transparency of what we were trying to achieve, and the transparency of our scorecard and sort of where we were as a business and where we needed to be to enable that shift made it easier for us to be totally transparent with this person about where we were in that process. Now, they could be upset and they could say, this isn't going fast enough. And like, I don't want to be here if it's not going to go fast enough. Or they could say, okay, I get it. I see why. I still love this company. I still want to be here. I understand it might take a little longer, but at least I know I'm fully aware of what's going on here. So for us to be able to, if we had instead said, hey, listen, like, we want to have this internal team. Not yet, not yet, not yet. It'd be easy for someone to say, like, you're just giving a lip service. You don't really mean this. But with the full context of the whole plan and where we're at, it was easier to understand why we weren't making that choice and able to communicate not just to them, but to the whole organization, because it was going to impact everybody in terms of moving someone into a growth role and then impacting our growth, impacting our pipeline, impacting the client team that they were no longer a part of, et cetera.
That's a really great example, Matt. And I think the thing you touched on there, transparency, is another great part of EOS that I've experienced. You know, where are you at with your rocks? What is the scorecard? As they say in EOS, it's easier when you're able to see the score of the game, right? It's really tough. And we've talked on this show about burnout, different sorts of burnout that can happen in agency life, and demanding clients, not a healthy work-life balance, as we've talked about. What can also contribute to that is if we don't know if we're winning, we don't know if we're succeeding, both as a team and as an individual.
That's right.
What are some of the things that have helped you guys leverage, you know, your tracking on your rocks and your weekly scorecard? One of the traps I've seen with some teams is there's maybe a little bit of hesitancy to have that transparency to say when things are off track.
Oh, yeah.
Because it feels a little bit uncomfortable once you're getting into that motion initially. What have been some of the things that have helped you guys implement things like the scorecard of EOS and actually do it effectively, where it's building that collaborative, supportive culture to get things done that you alluded to earlier?
Well, I think if I'm going to have employees fully bought in on what we're doing and bought in on our purpose and where we're going, I owe it to them to be transparent about what it takes to get there. And I think, as I mentioned, I don't have a business background. You know, it wasn't that long ago. If you would have said, what's the difference between gross and net margin? I'm like, I don't know. Are they different? I mean, there was a lot of stuff about just business. I'm a sales and marketing guy. I did this because I wanted to do the work, and I didn't know how to grow a business around it. Right. So I've learned a lot along the way. I joined EO 10 years ago. It's been instrumental in my growth, separate from EOS. We can get into that. But I think, you know, what I've learned, though, is you want trust and credibility with your team. You have to be transparent in the good days and the bad. And we have to also educate people on, like, here's what it means to run a business. Here's what our financials look like. Right? I mean, we're pretty open about almost everything except for salaries. So, you know, hey, here's what our money looks like. Right? You know, when we close a deal, that's great. But once you close a deal, there are milestones at which you actually bill the client. And then there's payment terms from which they actually pay you. So great that we got this deal, but that doesn't mean cash is in our pocket maybe anytime soon. Right? So if people see, oh, we've had a great sales month, that doesn't mean we've had a great cash month. And for people to say, like, oh, without knowing the business, like, I'm assuming that we must be doing like a 60% profit. It's like, no, no, that's not how it works. And so kind of being able to show people like, here's the mechanics of the business. Here's what we're invested in. Here's the trade-offs we're making. Here's where we're at right now. And when it's not pretty, like it's just to me, I don't want to sugarcoat that. Because the last thing I want is for employees, like if we're saying like we're going through a rough patch, either we're managing cash tightly or sales are slow for this quarter, whatever it is, like that's not a leadership team challenge. That's a company challenge. And so I don't want employees to think, oh, hey, everything's great. At the same time, I want people to know what investments we're making to sort of dig out of that. I want them to know what our strategy is to move from a challenging time to a more successful time. I don't want anyone to hear me either give rose-colored glasses or share where things are struggling and be like, am I worried about my job? Like, you know, you just clear to people like, listen, our people are our priority. Awful lot of other stuff that we're going to get tight on before we do anything around employees, right? And so to be really crisp and transparent with people around where you're at, not always a fun conversation to have, but I think the right people that are in the right people in the right seats that should be there, you should be able to trust them that information and say, okay, like, how do we row the boat together? And I'm really, really proud. Like when we've had to have some of those hard conversations over the years, you know, the right people say, how do I help? What can I do to support what we need to accomplish in the next couple months, next quarter, what have you? Because it's not just on you as a leader. It's not just on you as a leadership team. Like everyone can play a role in rowing the boat.
I love what you said there about everybody is responsible in rowing the boat. Matt, we talked on this theme that we've both gotten from the language of EOS, right person, right seat. And two of the really important seats, if you are following a model like EOS, are the visionary and integrator. Based on what you said earlier, I'm assuming your COO is sitting in that integrator seat and you're sitting in the visionary seat. Mm-hmm. I've heard it said before that the corresponding or complementary and very different skill sets of the visionary and integrator is not a problem to be solved, but it's a tension to be managed.
Oh, yeah.
One, what does that tension look like for you and your COO? And how have you guys maybe effectively managed it if that quote is actually true and rings true to your experience?
It should be true. But I think you have to be transparent about what that means and what that's going to look like in practice. So first of all, like I get the why they call it a visionary role. I kind of throw up in my mouth a little bit thinking about a visionary because like I just like, okay, like you'll read the description. I'm like, okay, that's what I do. Like I'm the last person that's going to describe myself with that as a title. That said, my brain's firing on things all the time, right? And so I have different ideas strategically, tactically. The last thing our business needs is for me to go throw that into the business and distract everybody, right? And so like, I have a very explicit agreement with Maria. Like I'm going to send it all to you and your job is to say no to most of it. Like the vast majority of it, right? I need an outlet because some of it might be decent. Some of it might be crap. Some of it we might need to just table until we get these other priorities done, right? But you are the filter and you're going to sort of figure out where those things go. And so it allows me to essentially be unfiltered, but have someone that I know and trust is going to be the right filter to figure out what gets through and what stays. And so we've built ourselves a set of tools. We've got sort of a weekly sort of same page meeting rhythm. We've got, you know, she created a spreadsheet called the Visionary Log. And so she's got a place where she's sort of anything that I come up with, we track and we look at it every once in a while to say, do we need to pick any of these up and make them active, you know, conversations again? And I'm trying to think of the right way to describe this. I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm the optimist and she's the pessimist. I think I'm the dreamer and she's the realist, right? About what we can actually get done. Like, I still think like, why can't this go faster? Why can't we do these four things at one time? Why can't this happen in a way that I want it to happen? Why can't we go have this conversation today instead of waiting 3 weeks? And she's got a rational and 100% of the time, correct answer to why we can't do those things. And so I think that positive tension is really, really important, but it has to be based on a foundation of trust and respect. If that doesn't exist, if we don't as a foundation say like, I wholly trust and respect you in your role, in your position, and your authority in your role, then we can't be successful. So when that exists, and some of that is the roles that we have, some of that is that we set up over the last 3 years, the role, some of that's just the relationship that we've had over the course of the last, I mean, she worked for me at a startup even before I hired her. So I've known her for 20 years, right? And so there's this, that we've established a relationship that's made it a lot easier for us to have some of those sort of difficult conversations, but do it, you know, in full respect and trust and credibility with each other.
That's a really good point about the rapport and the relationship that can help you navigate some of those friction points between the visionary and integrator. I totally understand that when you identify with the aspects of the visionary personality type and those sorts of things when you read it, but it's like, I'm not going to be the chief visionary officer on LinkedIn. Like, it feels like calling myself a thought leader, right? No. I identify with that. But I think that practical tip that you gave there of having that place and that recurring meeting between the visionary and integrator, I think you called that a visionary log, the spreadsheet, because as a visionary, you just, like, you're going to be frustrated if you can't get those things out, get those ideas that are firing somewhere. But if they're bypassing your integrator and going straight to the team, I've seen it where they're like, oh my gosh, you know, Matt's got another idea. Is this going to last? I thought we were doing this thing. And so I think that's a very practical way to meet needs on both sides.
Well, and we, you know, because we use EOS, we actually use a tool called 90, the number spelled out .io. And it's become our sort of, it's where we have all of our, basically how we operate EOS. In that same system, I have a list of issues for our leadership team that our L10 team works together. And then if I toggle, I go to a team that's called Rocket Fuel. And that's just for Maria and I. So every Thursday, we have a same page meeting. And I think in EOS parlance, they're like, oh, you can do it every other week and you could do it forever. No, we do an hour every week. And hopefully at some point we get to a point where it's like, we're not doing as much, but for now, like, especially since we're remote, all remote, like having that time and knowing that if something isn't urgent, I just throw it on the issues list for our Rocket Fuel meeting. You know, she's been on vacation the last 2.5 weeks, right? So I got a handful of things that are non-urgent that are already on the list. Sort of set it and forget it. I know we'll look at it next Thursday, right? And so like having those systems in place as well, to me, that's a little going back to sort of David Allen's getting things done. It's the mind like water. The fewer things I have that are sort of distracting me, the better. And the more I can get them off to other people that are better responsible for not just handling those issues, but triaging whether they should be issues now or not, the better off we all are.
Really good application there. And I appreciate you sharing the tool that's been helpful for you guys. At teamwork.com, we built a tool at instantagencytools.com. And we use that for some of those same things to be able to log issues on the issues list for different L10s. I like that you guys have a separate one for the Rocket Fuel meeting and that you guys are doing an hour every week. I think that speaks to the fact that there is a tension to be managed and there's value in the combination of the visionary integrator role, but it's tough to make it work in a longstanding, fruitful way in the way that you and Maria really have.
I owe it to her. I say, like, it's one of my favorite meetings of the week, like our L10 meeting as a group and our leadership meeting. And then my time with her is some of my favorite time because, like, we get into stuff. We get into things that are sometimes hard to, you know, some complicated, difficult things. But, like, if we don't address them and we just sweep them over the rug, they fester and they become bigger issues. And I think, you know, it's trust across our whole leadership team, but it's also the time and the attention to dig into those and to work through them so that you can go continue to run and grow the business. It's critical. And I think, you know, for us, 90s worked well, but I think what's critical is no matter where your business is, whether or not you're using EOS, like having a system that everyone buys into and is using, like we talk all the time, like, hey, if, you know, sales team isn't using CRM, then, you know, it doesn't happen. Like in the same way that your sales and marketing teams need to be using their systems, you as a leadership team, you as an entrepreneur need to have a system that can document and reinforce your plan of action. And ideally, that's a system that it becomes either fully visible or partially visible to the rest of the organization. Like when we have our VTO, our Vision Traction Organizer in the EO parlance, and we've got our scorecards, like we have versions of those that are externally available in our SharePoint for everyone to go and read, right? And so to have that transparency and that consistency from the top to the bottom of the organization, it's critical.
Really good advice, man. Well, Matt, I want to make sure we save some time for our final two segments that we do here on Agency Life. As much as I'm loving hearing your journey from making the decision to scale an agency to a certain point, the successes along the way to nearly 15 years in business. Congratulations on that milestone coming up, by the way. But our final two segments are Fast Five, and we're going to give you an opportunity to shout out someone who's impacted your agency life. You ready for the Fast Five, my friend?
Let's do it.
All right. If someone gave you $10,000 a month right now, Matt, to help you better run your agency, where do you think you would invest that extra capital if you just had it, no strings attached?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I'd invest in our growth team. You know, I think that one of the biggest things for me is, you know, we've done such a great job in building out our systems and processes of how we do work and how we apply our predictable pipeline methodology across all of our clients. You know, it's typical in a service business like ours. Like, I think, you know, I love the role that I get to play at the organization, but for us to grow, we need more of our pipeline to come from outside of me. And so we're spending a lot of time and effort right now building a pipeline engine independent of Matt. And so I think the more we can invest in that, the better we're going to be long-term.
Man, it has really surprised me over a dozen episodes in, 80 to 90% of the answers to that question have been some sort of growth oriented investment in marketing, our own agency, that sort of thing. So you are among the majority in that for sure. All right. Number two, Matt, we talked about the E-Myth. What's maybe one or two of your all time favorite business books that have impacted you in running and sustaining your agency?
Oh man, great question. Yeah, I mean, E-Myth was certainly very valuable. I think the EOS books, certainly the Get a Grip, Traction. There's a book specifically called Rocket Fuel that's about that visionary integrator relationship. Those have been great books for me. You know, the EOS system came out, a lot of work that Vern Harnish did. So his books around scaling up and mastering the Rockefeller habits, I like those a lot as well. As I get older, and as I've had this business now for 15 years, there's a book called Strength for Strength by Albert Brooks that has been really, really useful for me to think about, you know, as I enter maybe the second half of my professional career, like what are the things that I need to, that I want to prioritize? What are the things that I am best and most capable of doing? And, you know, as we all get older, you know, that the book points out just physiologically, like we don't have the energy or the capacity or the strength to sometimes do what we could do earlier in our lives. And that doesn't mean we are no longer useful. It means we are moving to a new stage in our life. And I think of that as in terms of also like, how does that impact my role in my own company? And what does that mean in terms of continuing to fulfill our vision and our purpose with what my role needs to be moving forward? That isn't going to be what I did 15 years ago, even 10 years ago. But what is that? How do I lean in on that? And how do we create a business that operationalizes that for me as well as for everybody else?
Yeah, it takes some self-awareness and sometimes some humility to ask those questions and answer them honestly.
Very much so.
But I definitely think if you've been running an agency for a while, it is worthwhile stopping and assessing and asking those questions. Absolutely. All right. Number three, Matt, what's one mistake you've made in running your agency that you'll never forget?
I wish I was more financially literate early on. You know, even though, look, the nice thing about running an agency like ours, like it's not that complicated. There's no real estate. There's no inventory. There's all kinds of things, finance issues that you really don't have to deal with. That said, I mean, I'll admit this, like I think early in the business, I equated, sales with cash. So like I'd look and say, oh, we hit this sales number in a particular month. That means cash in the bank right away. Like whatever that shows in terms of sort of here's sales, here's expenses, the difference I'm going to have at the end of the month, right? No. So I really wish I would have invested more in any basic level of financial literacy. I think it would have helped me make better decisions and probably would have reinforced the need to bring on more outside financial guidance earlier in the business. Where we are today, I don't know that would be any different, but it certainly would have saved me some heartache.
I was going to say, save you some heartache or some heartburn, at least a time or two. All right. My favorite two of the fast five we saved for last, Matt. Number four, what's the hardest part about agency life in your opinion?
I think the hardest part about agency life is the responsibility you have for other people's livelihoods. You know, if you work somewhere else, you know, you could say, oh, I got these people on my team, but a whole nother company and a set of governance really sort of owns that. Like you have a little bit of responsibility over whether they still work there or not, but not really. Like you own your own business. Like you've got, you know, let's say you have five employees. Those people have friends, family, they have kids, they have pets, they have commitments. That's on you. And I think I have gone from the point where that's a heavy burden. It's still a heavy burden. But as I mentioned earlier, I see that as a privilege. I see that as a huge part of sort of my job and my, I guess, living legacy is to enable that, you know, improvement of people's, you know, careers and lives as part of being part of this company. So I'm inspired by that. I'm humbled and inspired by that on a daily basis.
Well, maybe you led right into number five, which is the opposite side of that coin, Matt. What's the best part about agency life? Maybe you led right into it there.
Well, I think it's a little bit of that, but it's also, you know, sort of, you know, allowing to positively impact careers and lives. I mean, that starts with our employees, but it also it's for me. You know, I was able to, you know, work this week from our place up on Whidbey Island. You know, I started pretty early today and by 1:30 local time today, like I'm going to kick off and probably take a nap and, you know, watch a replay of some of the Open Championship from Royal Liverpool. And, you know, I'd to be able to define what hard work means, to define what the outcomes are and to be comfortable with that and to, you know, sleep well at night. That sometimes is a journey to get there as well. But that level of flexibility and freedom to do what you think is right, I think is a gift.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Matt, we want to round it out like we always do here on Agency Life and give you a chance to give someone a shout out who's impacted your agency life for the better. Who do you want to give a shout out to today?
Well, you mentioned Carlos Hidalgo already. I mean, he's been someone that I've learned from so much over the years and watched what he's done. I also want to just shout out to someone, you know, in an agency, but not a marketing agency, Shannon Swift, who runs Swift HR here in Seattle. She's been so helpful for me as someone who is running a business that I joke with her. I said, you're like 5 to 7 years ahead of where I am. You know, I'll have lunch with her and she'll share some things she's struggled with and she's working on and things where she's like, oh, I've gotten to this point in my business. I'm like, there's no way I'm ever getting there. And then, you know, 5, 6 years later, I'm like, I'm sitting here wondering if we're going to do it. So I just appreciate Shannon. And, you know, I'm in this entrepreneur organization here in Seattle. And just there's so many people that have been open with their journey and with their experiences and been vulnerable about what is and what isn't about it. And I appreciate people like Carlos and Shannon and others that have done that. And just anything I can do to sort of pay it forward and continue to sort of whatever lessons I've learned along the way, if it can help others, I'm more than happy to share it.
Well, I think you've done that for the last half hour plus on this show. So thank you for that. And on that note, Matt, if someone listening to this wants to reach out to you as a fellow agency owner, other agency leaders that want to connect with you as a peer, maybe ask some follow-up questions on what you shared today, or be involved where you're involved, either online or offline, where would you point them to today?
Just email me. I'm just matt@heinzmarketing.com. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. I wish LinkedIn and texting would have more of an inbox system. I would give you my number, but if you text me, it might get lost. And I'm very bad at going back and responding. So email, at least I can see if it's unread, right? So matt@heinzmarketing.com. Very serious about if it, you know, if you're in an agency, if you've got any questions on this, if I can help in any way, please let me know.
That's a good shout. I did see someone with some sort of app the other day that kind of made this promise of bringing in your different inboxes all into one app, which I thought was interesting. But then I was like,
oh, take all my money. Yeah, no, I need something like that. Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that we can mark things in iMessage unread now has helped me in my follow-up in texting back and forth with people. But, you know, that focused inbox on LinkedIn hasn't quite solved all the problems with LinkedIn DMs.
No, it makes it worse. This is the problem. Like even Slack said, oh, we're going to make it so you don't, it's just a whole nother inbox. And I don't totally mind. What I worry about is like the things falling through the cracks.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening today and for putting up with a little bit of rant between Matt and I here on how we're managing connections. But the point here is that we want to stay connected with you. So reach out to Matt and I on LinkedIn if we're not already connected. And we'll see you next week here on Agency Life. You've been listening to Agency Life, and we hope you've been enjoying each and every episode. If so, you've probably got a friend who'd find the show valuable as well. Sharing a podcast with someone in your network is an easy way to add value and show someone that you're thinking about them. Somebody probably came to mind for you just now. Go ahead, shoot them a text with something like, hey, I've been listening to Agency Life, and I think you'd like this episode I was just listening to. They'll probably really appreciate it, and hey, we will too. And if you're looking for even more content to support your agency life journey, check out teamwork.com/agency life. There you can search through past episodes, get access to the Agency Life newsletter, and find additional video content to support and inspire you as you continue on this crazy roller coaster ride that is agency life.